Well, 2016 ended on a very positive note for the Michigan Environmental Council. With us to talk about Michigan's new energy reform legislation and other key focus areas in 2017 is frequent guest on this program, James Clift. James is the policy director for the Michigan Environmental Council. James, first, Happy New Year, and great to have you back on the program.
Thank you very much. Appreciate being here.
Well, let's get right to the implementation of the energy legislation. First of all, sounds like MEC was pleased with that legislation.
We were. I mean, after all of this discussion of do we repeal things, do we go backwards, we took steps forward, and we think that's very positive. Continue investing in renewable energy, continuing investing in energy efficiency. These are the mechanisms that are helping try to keep our energy costs low, and we're going to continue to invest in those moving forward. So we were happy with the end product.
There was one thing that you battled, you and other organizations, and that were to continue incentives for residential energy users to use solar energy. A lot of our listeners may not be familiar with that particular dimension.
Yeah, so we've had a provision in place which have allowed customers to spin their meters backwards when they put solar on. So if they put energy onto the grid, they basically get the same thing they're paying for energy when they do that. And over time, you know, you can't have everybody do that. So, and there was caps in the current program that was up to a certain percentage of a utility's load could come under those programs. And we expected the utilities would probably hit those caps in maybe the next 3 or 4 years. So under this law, what it says is it directs the commission to start to study what tariff makes sense to replace the current. If you're going to replace the current one, how would you design a rate in the future? And I think around the country, what you have is a lot of people talking about, well, what you want to do is blend the concept of time of use rates in with net metering, which is when are you putting energy on the grid? If you're putting it in the middle of a hot summer afternoon, then you should be getting big money for it because that's when energy is the most valuable. And if you're taking it off at 5 in the morning, then you should be paying less. So maybe blending those two concepts together to make sure that we continue to encourage people to set up those systems, but also encourage them to do energy efficiency. So if their systems are generating electricity on a hot summer day, put as much as possible onto the grid to share with your neighbors and to avoid the cost of utilities having to go out and buy high-cost energy during those times. So that change, though, is not coming overnight. We've actually, current programs will operate for at least another 2.5 years as we develop those tariffs, then slowly implement them with the utility. So it's a good deal now. This is actually a great time to continue to jump into those programs for the next 2.5 years. But then eventually we will transition into this new tariff.
What about the energy efficiency programs? I'm familiar with those that Consumers Energy has implemented. I know DTE has some. But how will those be expanded? Will those continue as is?
Well, what we did is the standard is the same. So they have to reduce demand by at least 1% a year on the electricity side, a little less on the natural gas side. What we did is put a few sweeteners in there where if the utilities improve their performance, we've got their ability to earn some more financial bonuses. So we're actually hoping our rate has been in the 1.2-1.3% range. We've got a little added bonus if they get up to 1.5%. So we're hoping that they get above that number sometime in the next few years.
Now, on the renewable energy standard, it's been set now at 15% by 2020. Good move forward, but a lot of people would say, wish it could have been more.
Yeah, and again, given the price of renewable energy, it is the best deal in the state today. So we really kind of view that as a floor, is that the utilities should be at least at 15%. But part of the new law is also for them to come in with comprehensive plans before the commission. And we'll be arguing that it actually should be more than 15% in those comprehensive plans. Once you compare it to the other things that they want to invest in, if it's cheaper than natural gas and they want to build a new natural gas plant, we'll be arguing for more than 15%. But it's nice to have in the law a floor. So right. You've got to keep moving forward. You can't just sit on your hands like they have been for the last year or so.
True, and it's clearly a step forward. There's no question about that.
It is.
Let's turn to another hot issue. That's that Line 5, Enbridge Line 5 in the Straits of Mackinac. We're waiting on a couple of reports that are supposed to be coming out in June. Where's the Michigan Environmental Council? You're probably monitoring that process.
We are very closely. I mean, the key is you've got a 63-year-old line in the Straits, and I think everyone admits, hey, eventually you want to replace that line. You're putting the Great Lakes at risk. So these reports will look at, hey, what are the reasonable alternatives to that line? So they'll come out this summer. They'll take public comment on those reports. But hopefully those reports will help outline, hey, what's the next move for Michigan? And what's the next move for getting that pipeline out of there? What's the next move for protecting the Great Lakes and moving forward? It won't happen overnight, but we're hoping this report kind of gives us a roadmap for how do you get those pipes out of the water? How do you better protect the Great Lakes moving forward?
Well, I'm talking environmental issues, looking back a little bit at 2016, looking ahead to 2017 with James Clift. He's a policy director for the Michigan Environmental Council. James, we were talking about the two reports related to the Enbridge Line 5 that are due out in June. One is a risk assessment and one looks at some alternatives. A little bit more detail for our listeners on the difference between the two reports.
Yeah, so the risk assessment is really looking at that. What's that worst case scenario? What if the pipeline was to break, and let's say in the winter months when there's ice cover, you couldn't address it immediately, you couldn't grab any of that oil? What if the mechanisms to close off the lines didn't work properly? We've seen that a lot around the country, where in Kalamazoo River, it was 19 hours before they knew that was broken. Down in the Gulf of Mexico, of course, how long it took to close off that one. So what if those mechanisms don't work? What is that impact of the Great Lakes that we would expect to see? You know, and again, the University of Michigan and other people have done some studies on what does that look like. This will hopefully reaffirm those findings that it is a multi-billion-dollar threat that is out there. And then the second report, of course, then looks at, okay, what else could we do to get those lines out of the water? Is there existing infrastructure we could use? You know, other pipelines that are currently in the system. You know, you look at Michigan, we continue to use less oil products every year. Our sale of gasoline has went down about 1% a year. So as we start to reduce that use, and as maybe as electric cars take over, does that reduction become even more? Do we need that line anymore, or could other existing lines be adequate to serve our needs moving forward? That's one of the alternatives the report will be looking at. So again, what are the different other ways we could deliver oil, make it available to the customers who use it and propane, but in a way that doesn't provide that same threat to the Great Lakes?
Probably two of the most anticipated environmentally related reports in recent memory, at least for the great state of Michigan.
I think so. And again, they're comprehensive reports, and hopefully will provide good detail on what those alternatives look like.
We talked about a pipeline in the Straits of Mackinac. As long as we're talking about water, I know one of the things on your agenda for 2017 is not just Flint, but looking at the Michigan water infrastructure in general.
Yeah, I think, you know, there's been a lot of attention toward Flint, and we don't want to take our focus off of Flint. You know, there's some federal money that's come in. I think we should match it with some state money. Let's address the infrastructure problems we see there. But then let's not stop there and think, oh, Flint was just an anomaly, that that's the only place there is a risk to drinking water infrastructure. Let's look around the rest of the state and ask the question, well, where else are there lead service leads in a system? Do we know where they are? And do really important to us is, do the customers, do residents of the state of Michigan know the state of their infrastructure? Is there a lead lead going to their home or their business? Or is their community like Flint, where they didn't know exactly where they are? And should they be receiving some materials that say, hey, either, hey, there is one there or there's not one there? And if there is one there or they don't know, maybe a recommendation that those families use filters until we answer that question and get those lead pipes out of the system. so that we can kind of guarantee that we're providing safe drinking water to all the residents of Michigan.
Now, aren't there a couple cities in Michigan, and I think Lansing may be one of them, that have been pretty aggressive with respect to any lead within the water infrastructure?
Yeah, so Lansing discovered theirs about 10 years ago, and we have now replaced all the lead service leads in Lansing. I think just this in the last 6 months, I think, we finished that job. It was an expensive undertaking. It's not one that you want to rush through it, so you do it kind of periodically over time. But we've made that investment in the system, and we can now kind of, with assurance, tell the residents of the city of Lansing anyway and the Born Water and Light system that they're protected. But and a few other cities have done that. But a lot of cities are more in the Flint category. They still have that old infrastructure in the ground. Sometimes they know where the lead leads are. Sometimes they don't. And again, making sure we get information to the public so that they can manage their risk. Because if you don't know, or if you had a lead lead, what the city of Lansing did, I thought made perfect sense. Provide free filters to the customers. Help them make sure they can get them installed. In Flint, that's been a little bit of a challenge on different faucets that are out there, making sure you can install those filters and making sure they have safe drinking water for their families.
We're talking about a variety of environmental issues with James Clift, who's the policy director for the Michigan Environmental Council. Something that we've covered on this program with Joan Rose and others, but the septic systems, not only in the state of Michigan, I mean, we're going to talk about that, but nationally, part of the eroding infrastructure that a lot of people, I have a septic tank. Have I had it checked properly? I have it pumped, but have I had it checked in the last 15 years? No.
Yeah, so I think this is key. And really looking across the state, where when we look at drinking water, we look at two things, the infrastructure to deliver it, but you're also looking at your source water protection. Is your groundwater safe? You know, if there's leaking septic systems in your area, are they potentially contaminating groundwater or local rivers and streams? So making sure that everybody in Michigan is doing their part in protecting our water resources, both those people on public systems and people on private systems. So we're going to make another run at basically adopting a uniform septic code for Michigan. We're basically the only state that doesn't have that uniform code. But even more importantly, a periodic inspection requirement, either at the time of sale or every 10 years or something like that, to make sure those systems are in place. The time of sale is kind of nice because it protects new home buyers.
Right.
And that's kind of nice. You don't want to buy a home and then a year later find out that, oh, you've got a $5,000 drain field that you've got to replace. I think part of this program would probably then to be maybe set up a fund that could provide low interest loans to somebody that maybe couldn't afford to upgrade their system. They find that it's in failure, making sure that we have funds available for them to upgrade those systems so that either if they want to sell their homes or continue to use it, there's funds available at a reasonable interest rate.
Well, let's bring it home here for people like me. If I wanted to do the right thing ahead of selling my home, for example, and I wanted to have my septic system inspected, I mean, where do I go?
Yeah, so right now there is 11 counties in Michigan that require an inspection at the time of sale, and all of those counties have like list of authorized inspectors.
I see, so you go to your...
So you can either go to one of those lists that are probably in maybe a surrounding county if your county's not doing it. But I think your public health department, probably the best place to go to ask that question. Yeah. Again, more and more of those counties are getting involved. It's kind of a public health county issue. And a lot of them, what they do is they have a list of authorized inspectors. So that's a good place to start.
Great. We cover recycling on this program quite a bit. It's no secret Michigan's recycling level is not what it is in some neighboring Great Lakes states. One of the things on your agenda is to increase recycling efforts, probably working with the Michigan Recycling Coalition.
Working with them and the Snyder administration. Yeah. They have put a fair amount of effort behind trying to get Michigan's recycling rate up there because they realize that it is both good for preserving landfill space and for economic development opportunities. Those companies that use recycled materials want a guaranteed waste stream. So how do we help them make sure that that's going to be available in Michigan?
Yeah, and I think there are some funds that the Snyder administration has made available to the Michigan Recycling Coalition and others to get the word out there.
Again, a little bit more is kind of tracking what we have and making sure that the counties get more involved in the planning process to make sure that we're creating those good recycled material waste streams.
We've got 30 seconds left, Jays, but something quick. I wasn't aware of this. Create an Office of Outdoor Recreation within the DNR.
Actually, it could be the DNR, it could be the MEDC. The idea is, hey, we want to kind of build on the Pure Michigan campaign. Let's create an Office of Outdoor Recreation, really sell to people in Michigan and around the country the opportunities that are available in Michigan.
Always interesting to talk, and there are a number of others. The environmental slate, the agenda, is going to keep you very busy in 2017, James.
It always does.
I've been talking with James Clift. He is the Policy Director for the Michigan Environmental Council. Always appreciate your time, James.
Thank you very much.